Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Banadari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Banadari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Jamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radhe Shyam, Jaya Radhe Shyam, Jaya Radhe Shyam, Jaya Radhe Shyam. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada 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 Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Nitya Lila Parvista Astatara Satasri Siman is the one who is Swami Srila Prabhupada Kija. Premsakaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadha Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Kira Sri Sri Radha Shama Sunda Gopa Gopina Sham Kunda Radha Kunda Gira Govaran Kira Dhranta Raj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai Gaura Vimanandi. All glories to the Asama devotees. All glories to the Asama devotees. All glories to the Asama devotees. All glories to the lotus feet of Sisi Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, ninth chapter, text number 48. Tato Yudhishthiro Gatva Saha Krishna Gajavayam Pitaram Satvayam Asham Gandharim Chatapasdinim. Tato Yudhishthiro Gatva Saha Krishna Gajahavam Pitaram Santvayam Asham Gandharim Cha Tapasvinim. Please chant.
Bye.
Tata. Thereafter.
Thereafter.
Yudhishthira.
Yudhishthira.
Maharaj Yudhishthira.
Maharaj Yudhishthira.
Gatva. Gatva.
Going there.
Saha.
Saha.
With.
Krishna.
Krishna.
The Lord.
Gajavayam.
Gajavayam.
In the capital name Gajavaya Hastinapur.
In the capital name Gajavaya
Hastinapur. Pitaram.
Pitaram.
To his uncle Dhritarashtra. Satvayam asa, consoled. Gandharim, the wife of Dhritarashtra. Cha, and Tapasvinim, an ascetic lady. Thereafter, Maharaj Yudhishthira at once went to his capital, Hastinapur, accompanied by Lord Krishna, and there he consoled his uncle and aunt, Gandhari, who was an ascetic. Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, the father and mother of Duryodhana and his brothers, were the elder uncle and aunt of Maharaj Yudhishthira. After the battle of Kurukshetra, the celebrated couple, having lost all their sons and grandsons, were under the care of Maharaj Yudhishthira. They were passing their days in great agony over such a heavy loss of life and were practically living the life of ascetics. The death news of Bhishma Dev, uncle of Dhritarashtra, was another great shock for the king and the queen, and therefore they required solace from Maharaj Yudhishthira. Maharaj Yudhishthira was conscious of his duty, and he at once hurried to the spot with Lord Krishna and satisfied the bereaved Dhritarashtra with kind words from both himself and the Lord also. Gandhari was a powerful ascetic, although she was living the life of a faithful wife and a kind mother. It is said that Gandhari also voluntarily blindfolded her eyes because of the blindness of her husband. A wife's duty is to follow the husband 100%. And Gandhari was so true to her husband that she followed him even in his perpetual blindness. Therefore, in her actions, she was a great ascetic. Besides that, the shock she suffered because of the wholesale killing of her 100 sons and her grandsons was certainly too much for a woman. But she suffered all this just like an ascetic. Gandhari, although a woman, is no less than Bhishma Dev in character. They are both remarkable personalities in the Mahabharata. Om Gyana Tamarandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksu unnaritam netanam tasmai sri gurave namaha. Mukam karoti vachalam pangum lam jayati girim yakribata maham bande sri gurum dinitarina. Vancha kalpaturu vishyaki pasindu vaheva cha patitanam pavanavu vaishnavi namaha. Jaya sri krishna chaitanya prabhu nitananda sri advaita sri gadadha sri vasadi gaura bhaktarinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. my only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste nectar, my obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. So here we have Yudhishthira Maharaj assuming yet another role. This is the circumstance that he finds himself in. Well, many of us do, that we have so many different roles, so many different positions, so many responsibilities that we have to assume. And this, like many of the others that we've discussed so far, is a role that in reality he was not very keen to assume. This is not something he wanted to do. This particular situation in this verse of having to console his elder aunt and uncle, of course an aunt and uncle would also always be elder, but at any rate, having to console them on the death of all of their sons and grandsons, simply reminds him of the fact that has been a cause of his own distress. Namely, that so many people were killed for the purpose of putting him on the throne. We've spoken of this before, and this chapter touches on this particular subject in many different ways. That, not the least of all those being killed, of course, are his own cousins and nephews of his family relation. You know, this entire battle has caused the death of so many personalities, elevated, great, advanced, saintly personalities, family members, respected gurus and acharyas, so many people that have been killed, all for the purpose of Maharaj Yudhishthira to sit on the throne. So only a person who is incredibly insensitive, personally motivated, and with ill intent would willingly accept this without any second thoughts, without any hesitation, without any consideration of the distress that he's caused others. Of course, we all know this is not the personality that Yudhishthira is. Everything about this situation, as this chapter has indicated, has caused him some disturbance, has been a source of distress. This is why he's come to Bhishma Dev, as Bhishma Dev's departing, to get this guideline, to get this instruction. Now Bhishma Dev is gone also. He adds that to the pile of, in modern terminology, we would say guilt that he's feeling. Now we take that situation and we intensify the pain that must be felt and experienced by Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. And it's noted here a little briefly, Prabhupada says here, after the Battle of Kurukshetra, the celebrated couple, having lost all their sons and grandsons, were under the care of Maharaj Yudhishthira. This again, just that one sentence, notes the character of Maharaj Yudhishthira, that he took the responsibility to care for Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. Generally, the elders are cared for by their sons, cared for by their grandsons. This is the family structure. This is the natural course of events in any civilized society. Modern-day society, we shut people away. We see to their removal, to the disacknowledgement of our responsibilities, all these different types of things. Maharaj Yudhishthira was not that type of a personality. He took this responsibility. He brought them under his care. Of course, this being brought under the care later, we'll learn that this was this provided a situation for Vidura to step in and attempt to wake up Dhritarashtra to his foolishness and force him out of this life of pain and discomfort. Although he was living comfortably in the sense that his facilities, his material needs, his situation was taken care of and provided for, it was a great source of difficulty. Imagine you're living with the the younger members of those who have killed all of your family, and you're existing only by their kindness. For any person, this has got to be what to speak of an individual who had previously been in a great position of power, been the emperor, so to speak, You know. So anyway, all of that comes in some later chapters. We find out about that and Saint Vidura's instructions in this regards. Now, add to that, as if this wasn't enough, let's throw something else on the pile. Add to that the departure now of Grandfather Bhishma, their confidant, their equal, their peer, someone they respected. The unhappiness of Dhritarashtra and Gandharva is now beyond imagination and has caused their grief to just expand unchecked. You know, at least if you're an elder and everyone beneath you, and by beneath you I mean age-wise, all your juniors are gone, at least you've got a contemporary, you know, someone you can commiserate with, someone of your age group that you can reflect with. Now that final person, Grandfather Bhishma, has departed. It's just them. And we can't even imagine the grief that they're carrying around with them. But in spite of this fact, and in spite of how awkward Yudhishthira felt in this scenario, it's noted here in the verse and the purport that he was conscious of his duty and that he also had the understanding that he could and needed to console them during this time of immense sorrow. Duty. This is something we all have to be conscious of. Oh, it's just too much trouble for me. I don't want to be bothered. No, I can't take that up. I've got too many other things going on. I'm not really that interested in doing it. No. This is the modern day, weak-minded, irresponsible attitude. We don't see these qualities present in Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira realizes, I feel awkward because I've had to assume this role, and what to speak of the relationship I now have that is, as I mentioned, extremely awkward, of caring for Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. But now, Grandfather Bhishma is gone and they're suffering even more. I have to go and console them. But Yudhishthira was intelligent enough to realize that not only do I need to go and console them because it's my responsibility, A, as the emperor, B, as their caretaker, and C, as their junior, but I should take Lord Krishna with me. So in this way, he has an understanding of his responsibility to his elders, of his responsibility, not only in the sense of support and caring, but emotional, to try and say something, to try and do something to relieve their distress. This is a situation when anyone departs from this world, all the family members are experiencing great distress, and there's different services, different gatherings, where others come to try and comfort them, to do this sense of responsibility, to try and ease their suffering. So this is the mood that Yudhishthira Maharaj is here. Now, it's worth noting in this purport that Prabhupada makes a point about this grieving process. I'm glad I have this hot tea here. It's one of the advantages of knowing all the Russians I know. They give me all these nice, big, thick socks that I can only wear a couple of times a year. At any rate, so Prabhupada mentions here, he says, they were passing their days in great agony over such a heavy loss of life and were practically living the life of ascetics. This is the nature of deep agony over the loss of loved ones. One becomes uninterested in eating, in sleeping, in maintaining themselves, in caring for their bodily needs, etc. Now, it's worth noting that these are also these symptoms of the highest stage of prema. Full love of God, you know, that you give up all your eating and sleeping and maintaining. Like, if we look at these list of actions here, or inactions as they are, they're also the behavior of the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan when they're separated due to whatever the circumstance would be from Krishna. But that's also another point we can go into in another class, on that in great detail. Not particularly applicable here. Here we see, due to this difficulty of the loss of family members, of loved ones, they become very, very renounced. practically, you know, we know what it means to be an ascetic. You know, we in our comfortable ISKCON life, okay, I'm very renounced. I don't eat any grains and beans on a codicil. I only take, curd and lots of fried vegetables. And this is my codicil, Vrati. Now I've noticed, and I don't say this with any judgment, just an observation, even on the major festival days, nobody fasts anymore. Very few people. Everyone lines up at the prasadam tables and the prasadam booths and tents and eating all day, you know. So our sense of being ascetics, of austerities, is not very well realized. Here we see that it's indicating that Dhritarashtra and Gandhari were living very, very renounced type of life. You know, very, very unable to motivate themselves to eat, sleep, take care of themselves, just constantly feeling this sense of loss, this sense of, family members that have departed. Now, in the purport here, Prabhupada delves a slight bit into the life and character of Gandhari. When he lectured on this exact verse in 1973, he spoke in great detail about her. And a little bit further on in the Bhagavatam, chapter 13, in this first canto, Prabhupada gives some additional detail about Gandhari. So I think it's worth looking at that. Prabhupada mentions, she is the ideal chaste lady in the history of the world. Now this is quite a statement. Oh, so-and-so is very chaste, yes. But here he says she's the ideal chaste lady. And not just the ideal chaste lady in ISKCON Alachua or ISKCON New York or wherever. The ideal chaste lady in the history of the world. This is quite a statement. So she was the daughter of Maharaj Subala, the king of Gandhara. And in her maiden state, she worshipped Lord Shiva. So she was a worshipper of Lord Shiva. Prabhupada says that generally young ladies would worship Lord Shiva to get a good husband. This is indicated in earlier parts of the Bhagavatam. Gandhari satisfied Lord Shiva, and by his benediction, she obtained 100 sons. She was betrothed to Dhritarashtra, despite his being blind forever. Now, this is an interesting beginning of her life story here. When she came to know that her would-be husband was blind, to follow her life companion, she decided to voluntarily become blind as well. This is a standard of chastity, as Prabhupada says, the most chaste lady in the history of the world. This is a standard of chastity we don't see anymore in modern society, in any circumstance. But here she understood, oh, my husband will be blind, and therefore I will also become blind. And she took several silken linens, it says, you know, not just wrap one around, I can see underneath here a little bit, you know, if I really want to see what's going on, just lean my head back, oh, okay, there's Shandarshi, okay, all right, good, you know. No, but several linens, silken linens, and completely covered her eyes, so there was no chance of seeing. Just imagine that. Now, sometimes we read about someone in some news article or some documentary that somebody went blind and the difficulty of being able to see and then all of a sudden not being able to see. There's a documentary out right now I heard described about a drummer in some musical involvement that lost his hearing and all of a sudden he couldn't hear. So it was the documentary deals with the challenges he faced. Here we have someone that can see, very clearly has the power to see, but has restricted that. Such intense conviction. Just knowing that there's so much going on around you, and you want to, but no, I refuse to look. I mean, I don't think any of us can even imagine this. You know, try and sit in your house or you know, somewhere for 15, 20 minutes with your eyes closed, not opening. To speak of an hour, all right, a day. You know, it's just beyond our comprehension. So this is what she did. Once she learned that her husband-to-be And this isn't like she picked him. Prabhupada goes on to mention that this was arranged under the guidance of her brother, Sakuni. We know this name. Ha! Sakuni. He was very good at the dice, very good at cheating at the dice. But that's another story. So there's so many other stories in today's Prabhupada. At any rate, so she was married to him under the guidance of her brother. And she was the most beautiful girl at this time. What is one of the most beautiful features of a woman? Her eyes. Many places, the descriptions given of the various gopis is lotus-like eyes that extended. You know, you see that now the ladies take that little eyeliner and they extend it back past the, you know, it's a common thing now because it's a sign of beauty. They have to do it artificially, but yeah, this is one of the, so she covered these. So this is additional to her qualities. And she was qualified by her womanly qualities, which endeared her to every member of the Kaurava court. So aside from the fact that they were going to be appreciative of her austerity of, all right, my husband's blind, I'll be blind. Just her natural qualities and her feminine beauty, these all endeared her to everyone that she dealt with. But, Prabhupada continues, despite all of her good qualities, she had the natural frailties of a woman. And she was envious of Kunti when Kunti gave birth to a male child before her. Every lady, most ladies, want to have children. And if you have a so-called rival family member that has children before you, well, she became a little concerned like this. Both of them were pregnant at the time, but Kunti gave birth first, a male child. And of course, in this time, in that particular circumstance, having a male child was very essential for the continuation of the kingdom and the ruling. But so when Kunti gave birth, Gandhari, in an uncommon circumstance, became very angry and began to beat her own stomach where the pregnancy was. So as a result, she gave birth to a lump of flesh. We might call this a miscarriage in modern terminology. But once that happened, because she was a great devotee of Vyasadeva came to her assistance, and under her instruction, she divided this lump into 100 different portions. And each portion was put into 100 separate pots that was filled with ghee. And in this way, each of these 100 portions developed into a male child. Amazing things that go on in the Vedic culture that we can only hear about, we have no comprehension of. So in this way, her ambition to become a mother of 100 sons, which was indicated, which was indicated at the prior to her marriage, this came true, this came to be, and she nourished all of them. They all attained exalted positions in the kingdom. Now, when the intrigue and the fighting on the Battle of Kurukshetra was going on, she was not actually in favor of this battle. She was not in favor of this fight going on with the Pandavas. Rather, here again, in an unusual circumstance, she blamed her husband, Dhritarashtra. It's your fault. Who can be more honest with the husband than the wife? And many times this will be privately in their own chambers. Sometimes it gets done in public, but that's not usual. But she blamed him. This whole fratricidal war is your fault. You could have prevented it. There's no given script of the discussion between them, but those of us that are married can kind of summarize what must have taken place. We've all probably been in these situations. So she actually indicated if you would just divide the state into two parts, one part for our sons and one part for the sons of Pandu, then everything will be okay. We don't have to have this war. All these people don't have to die. But her husband was blind in many ways, as the Shastra indicates to us. Not only blind from the sense of physical ability to see, but he had no spiritual ability to see, and he had no internal insight. He was blinded by his undying love, regardless of the circumstance, for his sons. Now, there is one scenario where Gandhari removes her blindfold. Now, we all know that by the performance of tapasya, one gets shakti. One gets, you know, abilities. During the Chaturmasya, which we just finished, there are 32 particular vows that one can adapt to following. And each one of these vows has a particular result. One doesn't take any salt, one gets a good voice. One doesn't put any oil on the body, one gets a effulgent demeanor. One, all these different things like this, you know, these are part of the Karmakanda section of this, but they're there. They come regardless. Even if one follows for the principle of devotional functions, still the results are there. So imagine voluntarily giving up the eyesight. She became very powerful. And it was said that her vision could turn anything into the quality of stone. So she knew the battle was going to take place. She had been unsuccessful in convincing her husband otherwise. So therefore, she wanted to kind of give an edge to her eldest son, Duryodhana. She knew that he was going to have to fight and knew that he would likely perish. So she thought, if I look at him, then I will turn his body into stone-like, and he'll be able to resist all the blows. You know, you see this in the modern-day action films. The hero, whoever he is, takes endless beatings and, you know, punches and shots and whatever, and still he gets up and goes on. Well, having just gone through what little bit of surgery I did, I'll tell you, it's all a lie. It doesn't work that way. So at any rate, she understood that in the course of the battle, so much pain and blows would be inflicted on my son, I'll give him this edge. So she instructed him, you come to my tent, but come naked. Because now I will take my blindfold off, I'll look at you, and your body will become like stone and able to tolerate all of these blows that you will receive in the battle. So Duryodhana was in a obedient son. He was going to see his mother, and as he was going, it wasn't so uncommon to see ascetics, so to speak, going naked in society back then. So he was going to the tent of his mother, and he happened to pass Krishna. Whoa, wait a minute there. Excuse me, Prabhu, you know you don't have any pants on, right? No, mother has requested me to come this way. That's okay, you're going to see your mother, at least cover your, you know, I mean, put a loincloth on. Oh, yeah, I guess actually you're right. I should at least cover that section. All right. So he put some little lungi, you know, some loincloth. Just the midsection of his body was covered. All right, now you go see your mother. Much better. You know, nobody needs to see. So he came before his mother. Mother, I have come. The only time in her life since her marriage, she has taken off. You can just imagine the drama of this. She reaches up, undoes the knot, takes once around, twice around, three times around, drops it. She hasn't seen anything in decades. And she looks to her son to empower his body to be like stone. You got a loincloth on. I told you to come naked. Yes, Krishna saw me, said it was not proper. That Krishna. She knew. Anyway, all right, you had one shot at it. That's all I can give you. She wraps herself back up. I mean, what a classic film scene that would be, you know? Just the drama of it all. We can imagine, you know? Oh, you know, these guys doing all these different films, they should be devoting themselves to Mahabharata. It would be incredible. At any rate, so in this way, Duryodhana, we know the long end of the story. When the time came, he was struck in that region of his body where normally a warrior would not strike another warrior, but this was the plan of Krishna. So anyway, this is all part of Gandhari. She was greatly afflicted, of course. by the fact that all of her sons and grandsons died on the battlefield. And she actually, in that womanly anger, wanted to curse Bhimasena and Yudhishthira. Here again, Vyasadeva came forward. She was very devoted to Vyasadeva for many reasons, which we'll go into. And Vyasadeva came forward, no, this isn't correct. You check your anger. You can't curse them. It's not the proper thing to do. So, you know, in this way, you know, she's mourning very pitifully over the death of Duryodhana and Dushyant, and, you know, Lord Krishna pacifies her at this time with Yudhishthira by his side with transcendental messages. And, you know, Prabhupada continues on to mention she was equally aggrieved by the death of Karna. And she described to Krishna, you know, what the lamentation Karna's wife must be feeling. And, you know, she was pacified by Vyasadeva when he showed her, through his transcendental vision, he empowered her to see that all of her 100 sons had attained the heavenly planets. This is what happens to a warrior who's fighting on the battlefield. Go to the heavenly planets. So he was able to show her this. Of course, we know ultimately, as we'll read further, she died in the jungles with her husband in the Himalayas near Gangotri. This is where they had gone. Actually, when I was with Padayatra and we were walking from Rishikesh up to Badrinath, we passed the place where the Pandavas were Pandu, and this was earlier, but where Pandu and his different his two wives and all, where they did their austerities. So similarly, when Dhritarashtra and Gandhari went to the forest after the instruction of Vidur, they also went into the Himalayas like this. This is a common area up there where these great ascetics would go for their penances. Prabhupada continues on. He mentions how, as it says in this purport, that she was the ideal chaste lady, and that when she saw her husband was burning through his mystic yoga power, because when they retired to the forest, it wasn't just to, okay, well, we'll live here, you know. I mean, he went into mystic meditation and burned his body by fire. And she was despairing greatly about this. So she also entered into the fire like this. Now, Prabhupada mentions that feeling alone, she entered into the fire with her husband and followed her husband to death, thus entering like a chaste lady into the fire of her dead husband. And this is called the sati rite. And the action is considered to be the most perfect thing a woman can do. Wives are all taking note. The most perfect thing you can do is enter into the fire with your husband. Prabhupada continues on, though. But in a later age, the sati rite became an obnoxious criminal affair. Prabhupada uses those exact words. An obnoxious criminal affair, because the ceremony was forced even upon an unwilling woman. In this fallen age, it is not possible for a lady to follow the sati rite. There you go, ladies, you're saved by Prabhupada. As chastely as it was done by Gandhari and others in the past. A chaste wife like Gandhari would feel the separation of her husband to be more burning than the actual fire. Such a lady can observe the sati rite voluntarily, and there is no criminal force by anyone. So, you know, we can just see how terrible death and suffering, how much the degree of terrible death and suffering that she had to experience in spite of her being devoted to Lord Shiva and in spite of her being a follower of Vyasadeva. This is just another example of how even religious persons sometimes have to suffer in this life. It's not a guarantee that, oh, I've, you know, done very nicely, I've chanted all my rounds, I've followed the principles, I've listened to everything, and therefore I'll have no suffering. We see that. That's not the scenario. Now, elsewhere, in another place in this lecture I mentioned, Prabhupada says an amazing thing. So Gandhari, she is the daughter of Afghanistan, Gandhar. Still that name is there, Gandhar. Formerly, the name Gandhar meant the kingdom of Maharaj Gandhar. So she was the daughter of the Gandhar country. Now, I did a little bit of research on this, because this is one of those things Prabhupada says. You know, Prabhupada says things like this, you know, Argentina, Arjuna, you know, he makes these connections. And, you know, as followers of Srila Prabhupada, we eagerly and fully embrace these things. But, you know, sometimes it's nice to look up the history just to, oh, wow, you know, Prabhupada was right, you know, something like that. So I did a little research on Afghanistan, and sure enough, Kandahar, as it's called now with the K, was previously known as Gandhar and was ruled by Maharaj Gandhar and his daughter, Gandhari. So, you know, we can take this into account because we understand from the Vedas that previously the earth planet, Bharat, was under one ruler, was one kingdom, so to speak. And so if that's the fact, it isn't just the country of India as we know now, we can appreciate that these different countries were all involved in the kingdom of Yudhishthira Maharaj and those prior to him. Just like when they sent the challenge horse out, it wasn't just sent, you know, from Delhi over to Rajasthan, and from Rajasthan maybe down to Tamil Nadu, you know, like that. It was sent all over the world. And the different kings it mentions in the parts of the Bhagavatam where this discussed, they had to give their tribute and accept. So that's another interesting angle, how Prabhupada's vision of the world based upon the understanding of the Vedas is there. I think it's also interesting to note the difference between the husband and wife here. The exemplary character of Gandhari is mentioned, but we don't read a lot about the redeeming qualities of her husband. Now, this is just a little bit... Srila Vyasadeva, following the order of his mother, Satyavrati, begot three sons in the womb of Ambika and Ambalika. These were the two wives of his brother, Vichitravirya. The circumstance, of course, Vichitravirya died of disease at a very early age before conceiving any children. And the mother was very concerned that the kingdom should go on, the lineage. So it was a custom at the time, it was acceptable, that the brother could impregnate the brother's wife. If the one brother was unable to produce any children, the other brother could be asked, you know, to do this. This is common place then. So I had two wives, Ambika and Ambalika, and Vyasadeva was called to take care of this matter, so to speak. Now Vyasadeva, of course, we know, living in the Himalayas, the life of an ascetic, and very renounced. No concerns for his appearance, and quite a ghastly sight, in all honesty. Locks of matted hair, and, you know, not bathing in such a way that the bodily necessities of appearance were there, and, you know, probably nails, because, you know, they don't generally, I mean, all these different things. So you can imagine these young girls, okay, you're going to have a child from this fellow over here. So... Ambika was the first one, and when Vyasadeva came into the room, we know the story, she was like, oh my God, and she closed her eyes. So, okay, Vyasadeva said, I've done what you asked me to Satyavrati's mother, I've done what you asked me to, but your daughter-in-law, she was very fearful and closed her eyes, so the son will be born blind. So then was Ambalika. So same thing, Vyasadeva came into the room and she, whoa, just like in shock, she went pale. Well, Vyasadeva did what was necessary. And in this way, he told his mother, well, this son's gonna be rather anemic and very pale, not very healthy, you know, because she had this reaction. The third wife, Amba, Ambalika, and was a little smarter than the other two, she thought. She sent her maidservant. Now, you're my maidservant. You do anything for me, you go. I'm not going in there. I heard from my sisters. You go. First class learning. You hear from others. Huh? I'm not there. So the maidservant, of course, maidservants are by nature very submissive. So she was very accommodating, to use the phrase, to Vyasadeva. But Vyasadeva was no fool. So he went to his mother and said, okay, third time, very wonderful child, he'll be very learned, but he's going to be an outcast because your daughter-in-law sent the maidservant. And he said, and by the way, that's three times, don't call me again. Something can be done once, twice, thrice, all right, finished. So he said, that's it. So in this way, the different sons were born. And Dhritarashtra, of course, we know was the blind one. And he was the eldest. And so according to the law, he would be installed upon the throne. And but he was blind. And the law was that the blind son couldn't be installed on the throne. So, of course, you know, there was some circumstance in which Pandu departed. That's a whole other story. So many stories in today's forefront. There's a circumstance in which Pandu, his younger brother, departed, and so therefore he assumed it. And Pandu left behind children, younger children. As Yudhishthira, it's noted in this verse, as Yudhishthira took the responsibility of caring for his elders, Dhritarashtra had the responsibility to care for his brother's younger children. But he did so in a very prejudicial way, always giving them the back side of the hand instead of the front side. We were discussing this the other day when someone does Govardhan Parakram. You know where to work Govardhan in here somewhere. When someone does Govardhan Parakram, it's mentioned that Giridhari walks behind and listens. Now, many people do Govardhan Parakram for some material reason. They want a sauna, they want good grades, or, you know, that good position. So Giriraj, it's said, walks behind and listens. With the back of the hand, yes, you take. You know, that's not such a, yeah, all right, you go ahead and have it. But when the devotee does parakram of Govardhan for the purpose of getting prem bhakti, for the purpose of getting devotion to the Lord, for the purpose of improving their spiritual life, Krishna listens, Giriraj listens, ah, yes, you can have. So two different ways. So Dhritarashtra dealt with the children of his brother kind of in a backhanded way, not always giving them best facility and always arranging for things to be more difficult for them. So, you know, Dhritarashtra was not known to be the most selfless person. And add to this that constantly in consultation with him in all these matters was Sukuni. And we all know the character of Sukuni. We don't even need to go into that. But nonetheless, all of this is the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And ultimately, Vidura comes forward, which we'll discuss later, and good instruction is given to Dhritarashtra as to, you know, what he should be doing with his life. Vidura actually sarcastically addresses him as, "Oh, king, some king you are," you know. So, at any rate, we see here very clearly that there are times we can easily understand that the wife is certainly the better half. And this is one of those, the superior devotee, and many times the upholder of the religious traditions of the family. And I think it's quite notable that Prabhupada closes this purport with the following sentence, and I'll end with this today. Gandhari, although a woman, is no less than Bhishma Dev in character. They are both remarkable personalities in the Mahabharata. So we'll finish there. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to glorify this wonderful devotee. And if anybody has any questions or comments or corrections, I'm sure there's room for all the above. I was expecting. I'd have been disappointed otherwise.
Because one purport Prabhupada says that there is a fault of Dhritarashtra and Gandhari that they could have taken shelter. I'm paraphrasing what Prabhupada says, I remember. It's in the purport. It says that they could have taken shelter of Vidura because the Vidura is pure devotee. But they thought, oh, he's a brother. I mean, how can he be more advanced or something? And as a result, their destiny is not as good as devotee get destiny. So I was just thinking, even though she has such a great quality, but what that really helped ultimately? I'm not trying to put her down. Please.
Yeah, no, of course, of course.
But if it is not really pleasing Krishna, if it is not really pleasing devotee, what value is that chastity of?
This is the thing, is we have to know what is beneficial for our spiritual advancement as far as taking shelter, what association, what sadhu sangha we hanker. We have to have that discriminating intelligence. They chose that sangha, if you will, that would accommodate their being able to be cared for. You know, they may not have, had they taken shelter of Vidura, Vidura would have laid the line on them much earlier in the story. But for some time, we don't know an exact period of time chronologically, it's not indicated that clearly, but for some time they lived under the care of Yudhishthira Maharaj in that comfortable situation in spite of their renounced lifestyle. So had they taken shelter of Vidura, their upliftment may have been different, more swift, you know. But at any rate, this is all the master plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
But then I was thinking, like, how it's relevant to us. Like, I mean, this is also in our life, something like that. So many senior devotees pass by. I feel like, it's okay. I mean, just he's another one. But then I may miss the biggest chance, probably my biggest problem, anarthas in the heart, could have been removed by that devotee's association.
Yeah, we have to know how to grab it.
I mean, Jayadatta Maharaj told me sometime, he really told me, like, he says, sometimes you walk nowadays, nobody even respect, like, they think like, it's another person. It's like, it's so sad. I just don't know. Maybe you can give me some inspiration, like how to...
Well, you know, it's just important, like I say, to know what is sangha that's in our best interest. About a decade ago, when Indradumna Swami invited me to travel with him, somehow or another I knew, don't pass this one up. Adjust your work schedule, adjust your life schedule, figure out a way to make it happen. And fortunately for me, he took me in as an associate, and I mean, I don't know how much advancement I've made, but at any rate, I've had an opportunity to firsthand get that good association. So yeah, we have to know what is in our best interest as far as sangha. Okay, so we'll finish there today. Somebody online?
Mother Vishnupriya. It is very hard to get the concept of voluntary blindness by Gandhari when you would think that her being sighted would be a great help to her husband. This is hard to fathom. Can you say more?
I can't see anything more than Prabhupada said that she is the most chaste lady in the history of the world due to this action. This is something we don't see nowadays. You know, it's an amazing standard. We have these standards in the Bhagavatam just to encourage us. You know, we can't expect to follow these examples necessarily completely, but we can use them as inspirations into our own lives as to how we can, you know, benefit ourselves. Yeah.
I was just also thinking a point. I'm sorry, it's just my mind is going thinking. The Bhishma Dev, he never accused Krishna, even though he knows. He even said, 17 or 18 texts, he said, he is the ultimate sanctioner of everything. And it's true. Nobody knows his plan, but he is ultimately sanctioning everything. So even Bhishma Dev's whole failure in one way, to look at it, it's Krishna. But he never accused. Knowing that Krishna is the cause of all causes, but never accused. Rather, he saw Krishna is like a cure of his ultimate destiny, and he praised, and he was... But in Duryodhana's case, same Krishna, when Gandhari, Dhritarashtra, they were there, but none of them really... I mean, Krishna came as a messenger. They may not like the message, that to share the country or world, but at least they should have take some advantage of Krishna just came. I mean, can you imagine Krishna just came? Even I don't like the message, but how can I ignore Krishna? So it's like a just opposite. So I'm trying to reconcile, like, Gandhari's greatness of chastity is glorious.
That's the glory of a sincere devotee. Yeah. All right, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Premanandi.